Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. And Max, before we get into the week that was, I want to play back a clip that you said on this very podcast just 2 weeks ago. I'm going to pull it up right now.
My biggest gripe is they don't show enough bad shots. So now everyone in the world thinks that it's too easy. The ball goes too straight. I read somebody say that they haven't seen a snap hook in 10 years. And it's just, it's BS. It's full-blown BS. I'll see a snap hook almost every single week on tour. It still happens, but they don't show those shots.
So you wanted to see more bad golf shots, and really all we needed to do was get to Florida. And today, Max, we joke about you not getting a lot of camera time. They showed you on six, buddy. They showed you on the par five.
I worked my way onto the telecast somehow. I figured all the good golf wasn't good enough, so I went the complete opposite direction.
So it was a shank. I'm not one of those people who are superstitious and can't bring it up. It was I was out on a run. I got home. my Apple Watch was vibrating a lot. I wasn't checking it. I'd had all these texts. I hope you're watching. Did you see your boy? That was interesting. I actually had some. That was a hell of a six texts from people. And I of course thought maybe you'd hit it in the water twice. And then I got the video. Jeff Shackelford sent out a video. We will also be sending out a GIF or GIF depending on how you say it. What do you say? You say GIF or GIF?
GIF. The guys who started it said it's GIF.
So we go on this trip to Tubac down in Southern Arizona, and the people down there call it Tubac.
Yeah, Tubac. Remember my great jokes?
We have decided that we're going to go with Tubac. That's just what we've always called
Perfect.
It. So, but you're going to go GIF.
I'm going to go GIF.
So let's walk through the shot. Let's walk through what happened there.
Yeah.
Tee shot in the water. You hit your second over by the green thinking, let's get this up and down for par.
Yeah, we're in a horrendous spot. It was into the wind, so when we were walking up there, Joe and I were talking about how since into the wind we might actually be able to pull it off and take a pretty risky flop shot line at the pin and stop it. And then I saw my lie, and if I'm being completely honest with you, I almost always tell Joe I could pull it off, and that one I actually told him I don't have this one. Like, the lie was so bad. And then he said, okay, like, he's like, what do you want to do? I said, well, we'll pitch it left and then try and two putt from like 50 feet. But then as we talked about it more, the pitch out left with how bad the lie was going to be dicey, because if I didn't hit it far enough, I could still be chipping over the corner of the bunker, which obviously isn't like ideal. And if it comes out somehow hot, it goes through into the water. So somehow now we are back on going at the pin. We're kind of trying to hit a flop that great, like best case scenario, you know, flies over the bunker and goes on the green, but pretty much we were playing to be in the bunker, because the bunker shot into the wind wasn't going to be that bad. So we're just trying to make six. And I mean, this lie was something. It was the coldest of cold shanks. I got so lucky. I mean, the no laying up guys already probably hate us because of our deep rivalry, but I kissed it off the Golf Channel tower the Golf Channel NBC tower. And then it kicked left. I thought it was still in the water because it looked like it was, and we get up there and the ball's not even in the water. It's on the grass by some rocks, chipped up, hit the pin, could have made five. I was kind of glad I didn't. I did not deserve it. And then Sam Burns, who I was playing with, said the best thing ever. He said, why don't you go tap that thing in and get the hell off this hole? I said, yes, sir, I'm out of here. So it was funny. It was one of those things, like it wasn't a shank from like mechanics. It was a shank from, I just think that the rough caught my hosel or something, because you obviously never expect to do it, but even as I hit it, like it was so far off the hosel. It wasn't like a mini shank. Also wasn't the only shank. I hit a shank out of a bunker this week with a very similar situation.
Nice. Double shank week.
Double shank week. So it was pretty great. I knew it was going to be a funny video. I did not realize how good that video was going to be. It might be the coolest video ever. It goes right back to that the old picture of Tiger at the President's Cup where the ball is coming straight at the camera.
That's the one I was going to bring up.
Yeah,
they were wearing the velvet sweaters.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was that viral picture, the guy in the back with the look on his face and everything about it and the ball. So I did a little research, as I like to do for the podcast. And the cameraman that was filming this, his name's Bob Core Mandy. So Bob just about got one in the noggin.
Yeah, I was wondering, do I look up at him and just yell, hey, man, you want a Bob for some gift cards? Like,
everybody, that was the joke. People online were all about it. They could give a gift card out.
It was funny is I didn't hit anybody all week and almost got somebody in a tower on a pitch shot. it was like the perfect storm of bad things set up. But it's obviously funny. I know that people on Twitter are mad at me for being, I've just recently gotten I'm a sensitive MF-er. Which seems a little bit harsh. I was completely joking in my interview with Will Gray. I was being very lighthearted that, you know, I dare you to challenge me, just more saying like, go hit that shot. Like, I just don't know where or what you do with that shot. Obviously, it's, again, all my stuff's all good fun. You can make fun of me all you want. I think that the video is hilarious. I think the shot was hilarious. I still made six somehow.
Unbelievable.
Tied the guy in my group, which was even more kind of sad. I felt even worse about that. But yeah, it was just a funny thing. I mean, like I said, I was being pretty lighthearted and saying this in jest.
I want to give your quote. You told Will Gray after the round, this was on Twitter from Will Gray, the golf channel. You said, quote, if they want to give me heat, they can come play this golf course and they won't break 130. And again, you were joking and people were a little fired up about it. They gave you the whole, you dish it out, I can't take it. You're obviously kidding. It was a great moment. So they showed your reaction. You looked down at the lie. So they cut away. You're done. That was your. That was it.
I had what, four or five top 25s in 6 weeks, and that's the shot that makes it on TV. That's just unbelievable. But
that's the shot that makes it. I mean, I looked at the Shackleford video and had like 35K views. But so you're. What are you telling Joe as you're walking to play your fifth? I mean, are you kind of laughing to yourself, or are you bummed out and frustrated?
I mean, obviously frustrated a little bit. Not so much. I wasn't frustrated with the shot. I was just frustrated with the hole. I missed the fairway, right. Hit in the water. Got really lucky and it covered the line. And we, you know, had to, like, there's a pitch mark to prove it. So that was like good. And then I still thought I could make a five after the tee shot, but it was such a hard second shot. So I was just frustrated in general. Like, you know, I kind of grinded my way back to only be a one over through five. So it was just a bummer there. But I thought the ball was in the water. So Joe was the first to say, he said, yo, dude, like, ball's up. I'm like, okay, thank God. And then, so I was more just like, I mean, slightly humiliated, mostly thankful the ball's up and still going to pretty much accept a six or a seven. And, so it was just frustrated in general, but I wasn't frustrated at the shot. The reason I looked down at the ground was, if you saw how much grass came up and what that lie was, it was just like kind of funny and, you know, when you look back on it, not so funny at the exact moment, but I was just looking down and just being like, holy cow, that was like pretty much as bad as I could have imagined.
So how good was the shot that you hit the flagstick with? Yeah. I mean, was it as good as the shank was bad?
No, it wasn't quite as good as it was bad. It was pretty bad. It was good. I mean, it was like, you know, we weren't sure if I could aim like left enough to play the break, but I mean, I caught it pretty good. It probably would have run by though. I mean, it was going to probably go by like 6 feet. So, got lucky at the pin, but for a second there, I thought it was going to go in for five, which would have been the worst five anyone's ever made. But it was pretty good. I mean, it was still kind of a dicey lie and I played it through the fringe. It was a really good shot, but it was like worst or best six ever. I'm really not sure. It's one or the other.
So you brought this up yourself. I'm bringing it up at you. I want to hear about the bunker shot. If we're going to talk, listen, if we're spending 10 minutes, and this is after a great week with the Aon Risk Reward Challenge hole, this is after another unbelievable third round. This is a brutal week. This is the first week with the gift cards in the bag in case you hit it. And we have to start with this. Let's hear about the bunker shot. Yeah. What happened there?
Bunker shot. So I was super short-sighted on five.
What day was it?
Friday? No, I don't even remember, man. Yeah, so
Thursday's normally the opening. Thursday's the opening round, and then Friday they play the second round.
It was Thursday. It was Thursday.
Okay, Saturday's moving day.
Yeah, Thursday. So I hit it right in the bunker, super short sighted. And when I got in there, it was going to be a hard bunker shot, but you just try and hit it kind of as high spinny as you can and land it short of the green. But there wasn't a lot of room. But there was like a kind of like a clump of sand behind my ball, so I didn't want to hit it on the way back, because you're not allowed to. And I opened the face up and kind of had to pick it up outside and really, had to flare it. And I think just trying not to hit that piece of sand, I came in super steep and clipped the, it wasn't like the coldest shank, but I clipped the hosel, obviously, and it shot right. Kind of like it got really lucky and like hit the top of the bunker. like the actually the rough above the bunker and hopped out to like 40 feet and I two putt for bogey. But again, like I would say that that one, I've definitely done that before. I think everybody who tries to like kind of super open the face will catch one on occasion. It doesn't happen often, but that tuft of sand behind was just like mess with my head. That one was funnier than the other one because I wasn't going to make par from there more than once out of 10 times. So that was kind of funny because it all worked out, whatever. But the one on six today, just because I knew that the day was only getting harder, right, it was just right. Like, come on, man, you just can't make a seven on this hole. I mean, a six even wasn't going to be great, but like a seven, we're really working our way into a hole.
Yeah, number one player in the world made seven on that hole. Yeah. So you're okay. So,
it's hard.
So the word you just said it again. The word I keep hearing from you is hard. You keep saying yes. Hard. I'm gonna rattle off a few Justin Ray. You guys all know Justin Ray on Twitter at Justin Ray Golf. He's the best follow in terms of crazy stats for the 15th club. Fewest rounds in 60s on a weekend PGA Tour events this season. Honda had 13 Tournament of Champions, which obviously limited a field at 12. One Arnold Palmer Invitational this
week.
Only five rounds all time at Bay Hill where the field average 75 or higher. Two were this week, Saturday and Sunday. And fewest rounds in the 60s, rounds three through four combined in a PGA Tour event since 2000. 2020, Arnold Palmer won. 2006, Tournament of Champions won. And then you got the 04 U.S. Open and 07 Masters. So explain to me, please, because you're watching a golf course that typically, when the rounds get away from you guys, and when I say you guys, I'm talking about obviously professional golfers that are capable of playing any golf course in any condition. Typically, it looks like it did at St. Andrews. What was that back in 2015, where you know Koepka said he wasn't going to keep playing, and it was blowing, and the flagsticks were blowing over. That's typically when you see the scores balloon. I didn't feel like it looked like that this week. Yet we're talking about one of the hardest weekends in the last 20 years on the PGA Tour. Why was it so difficult?
I'll say this, that because I watched golf yesterday like a little kid and just like the happiest ever watching golf yesterday after my round. And I will say that it didn't look as windy on TV as it really was. It's one of those, you know, it's not as light out here as our cameras make it seem.
Right, yeah.
I know even, I think Zinger said it down to Maltby. He said, it looks like the wind's laying down. He goes, well, that's news to me. So I will say that I don't think that the TV caught how windy it was. It was windy. I mean, I've played in windier conditions. Everyone has, but it was quite windy. But the thing that made the golf course hard, first of all, obviously there's a ton of water, but this was the first golf course I've probably played. And it also helped slash hurt that I had never been here before. But well, you know, Monday through Thursday, we had a south wind. And for instance, that made one play down off the right, two was downwind, and then three was downwind. And three ended up probably playing as the hardest hole in the course, I would assume, or up there near it. And on three, I would hit a driver over the water. It was like a 320 carry, but it was so downwind, it would fly it, or 310 carry, and then I'd have 80 yards in. And it was honestly a pretty easy fairway for a righty. If you pulled it, you'd fly the water. If you pushed it, even if it went in the rough, you had an angle to the front of the green. So, you know, I'm playing that hole, and then all of a sudden it switches in off the left, and it just feels like there's nowhere to hit it. And if you miss the fairway right, the rough was really thick this week, as you could tell on my shank. but then you didn't really have much of a play. You either had to lay up or kind of take one on, and then you didn't really have an angle. Like today I actually had an angle because I decided to hit driver and I blocked it just a little. But the general difficulty of the golf course was the greens were really, really kind of baked out. And I don't think that they were crazy firm, but there just wasn't like a ton of grass on them. So there wasn't any moisture in them. So you just couldn't get a ball to stop. And anybody who's played Bermuda greens knows that like even chipping, like, and even like wedge shots coming in don't really spin back. Like you can get it to one hop and die, but you can't really get it to spin. So like even when you're kind of short-sighted with a little bit of green, you just couldn't really do a whole lot to stop it. The ball, if it was going with the wind, you know, if you draw it with the right wind, it's just going to roll forever. There's not a lot of run-ups just because a lot of the greens are pitched pretty back to front, right in front of the green. But like today was the perfect example. Like I hit the ball really, really well with my irons all week, especially on the weekend, control my flight, all these things. But you know, on certain holes, if your ball, like 18 is a perfect example, 18, I'm in the left side of the fairway, which is the best angle you could have, pins way back right. Truly, Joe and I just talked about it. Do not understand how Tiger hit that many good shots to that back area. It's so much smaller than it looks on TV. And like I'm hitting a 165 or 167. I had like a 7-iron out because it's in off the right. And we're trying to hit a very, very straight 7-iron that's low. and try to land it like 12 feet left of the hole. So start on the pin, finish 12 feet left of the hole. Well, I hit it and I hit it awesome. And it drew probably 2 yards and ends up 40 feet left of the hole. But if I cut that thing 2 yards, it's most likely in the water because now it's right. going against the wind and going shorter. So it's just like it required nearly perfect golf shots. When you hit a really good one, you got a pretty big, you know, reward in the sense that you weren't going to be in a bunker in the water or whatever, but you still like making putts was super difficult. So it's just like, you know, it just never, you never felt like you were the aggressor. It always felt like you were on the defense. You, every putt you hit, you had to really like even shorter putts. I mean, I three putt Saturday from 4 feet because the first putt I hit, it just, like I said, it didn't feel like you were putting on grass at times and it would just skid, skid, skid. And then you got 4 more feet coming back or 3 more feet coming back. So it just was like constant fear kind of what could come. And there were just very few, there were just like 16 was kind of the only real birdie hole. 12 was kind of a birdie hole. But even today, I mean, I had a 4 iron from 270 that landed short of the green and went over the green. And it was like the best shot, one of the best shots I hit all week. It's just like, it was just so demanding. And there even at times weren't quite shots that you could hit high enough and spinny enough to like stop them. So just, but I loved it. It was a great test of golf. Again, shout out to all the Twitter people telling me that I'm soft and I shouldn't play hard golf courses. I love it.
You are. I mean, you're too soft.
I'm too soft. It was actually really enjoyable. It was really enjoyable. I love hard golf. I know I joked about it last week, not wanting to play the Honda, but I love the Honda too. Like they're really fun events. It's such a change of pace. It's just when you finish, like, you know, I was joking with Xander and his caddy, Kaiser and Joe today, when we were Joe's face on him while we were driving. And I was joking like the Arnold Palmer this week was like a gateway drug to like a lot harder drugs. Cause it really made you want to like drink a beer when you were done playing. Cause it just was, you know, just like I said, every facet of your game is challenged and you are constantly, constantly nervous about something bad happening.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So again, you know, Max, you're having a great year.
Yes.
You're having a fantastic year. I've said this a couple times on this podcast already. I follow golf closer than I ever have in my life in terms of one individual, that being you. Every time you'd have like six, it would say 16 feet, 4 inches for birdie. You would always have 3 feet
dude,
back.
Oh my
God. Every
today
single
on eight,
time.
Today
there's
on
never
eight,
a tap in.
I hit, you just couldn't have a tap in. I mean, I told Joe on the second hole that my goal today was to just like from any distance, leave it within 2 feet. Just cause that's how kind of difficult the greens were. But yeah, on eight today, I hit like a really good drive, hit a really mediocre second shot and had a pretty fast putt and I hit it down there. And it felt really good. It just misses barely right and rolls like 4 or 5 feet more by. And I was walking up talking to myself. I was like, can we just have one kick in, like one stress-free kick in?
Just an easy par.
But when the greens are this
for.
Baked, like even when you have 2 feet, you got to mark it. And you know, kind of line it up because it's not worth the risk. And, it, you know, obviously with how much wind it is, you have to actually play wind on pretty much every putt. That's another thing with like the pace of play. I'm all for, you know, everyone playing faster. But like on weeks like this, it's just there's very few putts you could walk up and tap in just because it was just that demanding. Like on 11, Sam Burns hit a awesome chip from long of the green, like a little belly wedge. And I thought it was going to be 2 feet short and it was 5 feet past. And then I have a putt on a similar line and I left it a foot short. And Joe was the first to yell, like, that was a great putt, like great putt, dude. And I'm like, yeah, man, like it feels like it. And it was a 20 footer. So it's just, it's one of those weeks. It's just very, very difficult everywhere. It was fun. It was fun to see like par move you up a board. I thought that was right. really cool. It was fun to know that if you made a birdie at any point, like I think I was 2 over through 3 and looked at a board and I was only like, I only dropped like 7 spots and made a birdie, got back. So, yeah, obviously, not every week could be like this. The weather played a big part in it, but man, it was, it was fun to watch. I thought on TV, it's nice to see, cause not even like this, the scores, but it's nice to see everybody be tested with all the, you know, all the parts of their game. Like even Saturday when I played great, and I thought I hit it really well. I mean, I saw it hit 7 greens. It's a little bit off because I had a lot of fringe putts, but for the most part, it's like, man, this is pretty wild to think that I hit 7 greens and thought I hit it pretty good.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that would be like a poor week on a soft PGA Tour. But you mentioned it being fun to watch, and it was very fun to watch. I think this is the most fun golf to watch because you're seeing guys to your point, and it reminded me of that Sung Jae shot last week. At some point, you got to get up there and hit a golf shot.
For sure.
You know, there's no bailing out. You can't miss it somewhere because you're going to have 35 feet and it's a really tough two putt. You know, Tyrrell Hatton was on 11T, and I was about to write this on Twitter and I ended up getting caught up in doing something. I think he had a 3-shot or 4-shot lead, and I said, I was going to say, you know, you can make double or triple on any hole out here. And he literally made double on that hole. And I think that's what was so fun was he's coming down 18 and he's leading by one over Leishman. And you're, as a viewer, you're watching going, if he misses the fairway, we're probably going to have a playoff. That doesn't always seem to be the case. And of course, he had a great tee shot and wins by one. You mentioned it a couple of times. I want to go to your Saturday because do you have a nickname? Is there a Max Homan nickname? You ever been called anything?
I think Soft is the running nickname at the moment.
That's what everybody on Twitter calls you. And then I'm going to start calling you that too. But, you know, you're like moving day Max this year.
It used to be in college. It was final round Max. I had like the lowest final round scoring average in my freshman year. And I was the absolute worst. I mean, I wasn't even probably a top 100 college player, but the last round, if you needed me to shoot 65, I got you.
I can
so
do it.
It's turned to moving day, Max, somehow.
Yeah. So your third rounds this year have been incredible. You were the only guy on the entire field on Saturday to break par. And again, going back to Justin Rae for a minute, because he sent me this. There are two members of the only player to break par at Bay Hill that day club. You, Max Homa, in 2020 in the third round. And Curtis Strange
did it in
the second round.
That's cool.
In 1983, the year I was born, and you call me old. That was a while ago.
That was a long, long time ago.
The final round in 1980, there was not a single player to break par, but the one player to do it. So I want to go through real quick your Saturdays, your third rounds, starting in Palm Springs. So Palm Springs at the American Express, you shoot 63. That was T2nd lowest score of the day. 71 at Torrey, 64 here at the Waste Management. That was also T2nd, low score of the day. 71 you shot at Pebble, 65 at Riv, only two scores better than you all day on the golf course. And then 70 this week, of course, only player to break par. And you made double on 18.
Yeah.
So just Saturday, you make the cut on the number. So you are second off, right? There was
Oppenheim
went by himself.
Yeah, behind us, a single.
So single. I like how you sound like you're at a Muni.
Yeah. There's single out in front of you, but you'll be able to.
You guys go ahead. You got he's going to play fast.
Behind him.
So you go out there and play a near flawless round. I mean, I mentioned you make double bogey on 18, but it is a golf course that is literally beating up the best in the world. And when I say beating them up, I mean, you are seeing these unreal scores. I mean, 80s and mid 80s. And you're able to somehow get it in under par. Walk us through your Saturday. I mean, kind of from the start through the round, because you've talked a lot about how you enjoy playing in these types of conditions.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things, you know, obviously we're super stoked to make the cut because I did feel like I was playing pretty well. Even the 3-over on Friday, like it was just, again, it was really hard. It was similar wind direction. It's just hard. So 3-over at times isn't that horrible. And that felt like the case. I wanted to keep playing. Joe had pointed out he wanted to get more reps for me on this course because this should be a good course for me going forward. Just because it's a big kind of ball striking golf course. But yeah, so it was funny. We got to the course and it was cold. I mean, it was like 50 and blowing, like 15 or 20 already, maybe 25. And it was freezing. And we were all standing out there. I mean, I came out like 10 minutes late from breakfast. Me, Xander, and Taylor were all just kind of laughing. Like, this is going to be the worst day of our lives. I think right before I went to the range, Austin Xander's caddy said, all right, you shoot 5-under, we shoot 5-under, we play together tomorrow. And I looked at him with bugging eyes. I'm like, 5-under? Like, what is wrong with you? And I'm walking down 18 at 4. I'm like, holy cow, I might actually pull it off. But yeah, it was one of those things. I mean, I putted as good as I've ever putted for 17 holes. Like, I truly made everything. One, I made a 12-footer. Two, I made like a 20-footer from off the green. Just made everything. So it was like one of those types of days where the ball just kept going in the hole, but I did hit it really well. I felt like I never really left the ball above the hole too much for chipping, or bunker shots. I felt like I was, but I did say, like, I felt like throughout the day at some point, one part of my golf game was like the best in the world, you know, like for a point, my short game was a joke. I would hit, you know, I had two long bunker shots and I hit them both to gimme. I had a pitch that I hit to gimme. I hit my irons well all day. Even on 18, when I miss a green, it's just like such a flush, cool 6-iron. Drove it okay, not great, but like just, it was just one of those things. The ball, like I said, ball kept going in the hole. I kept leaving it in the right spots. I'll capitalize and leave it in the right spots. It was a wild day. It was like, it was one of those funny things where I was waiting for somebody to tell me how, well, at least you went off in the morning. So like, of course right. It was easier, but like, it might've been a little easier because the greens might've been a little less, crispy. They were still pretty crispy, but they might've been a little more receptive, but like, it felt like it was 35 degrees when we were warming up. It was so cold. So it was brutal.
Yeah, I talked to you after, and you told me, you say, if I don't make six on 18, this is like the best round of my life.
I thought it might
be
one of the best rounds ever. Like for me, I mean, it was just like...
If you make par and you shoot, what, 68?
Yeah, it would have been a joke. Lowest score by four. But yeah, but that's the thing, you know, again, about three putting. It's like, you're going to get bit. You know, right. I watched Scottie Scheffler do a very similar thing on nine. I kept trying to tell myself, because after the round, Joe was really adamant with me about like not thinking about it. He said that was still an unreal round, like do not think about it. And I thought I did a pretty good job of that, but it's one of those things, like after I saw Scotty do it, I said, well, what if I would have done that on nine? Like then what I felt, and I would have felt like it was one of the best rounds of my life. So I tried to look at it that way. Obviously when it's on 18, it stinks.
So if you make six, you're saying if I make six on nine,
I mean, it just doesn't, nice by the way, but it just doesn't, it doesn't feel as bad. You feel like you kind of worked your way into the round, because I did play really, really, really well. So it was a fun day. You know, I really wanted to be the only round under par once I saw the scores coming in at the end. So it was fun kind of grinding that out. But yeah, like I said, it was as fun a watch as I've ever had watching the golf course, because it was funny. Like anytime someone would birdie 16, I'm like, take it. Like, good luck on 17, 18. I mean, 17 was a 4-iron to like this back corner pin. It was so hard.
I did PGA Tour Live for Bay Hill last year, and I believe the whole location on Saturday this year was the final round one last year. And I don't think there was a birdie when Molinari
won. Everybody was 40 feet. Shot to 30 feet. I mean,
yeah, everybody was 40 feet.
Yeah. It was like a hole in one. He hit the most beautiful hold, I think 4-iron, and it landed just over the bunker and was pin high. And he still has 30 feet or something like that. So it was just, that pin was kind of a joke, because I don't think anybody really had a club to like hit a flare in there. But again, like I was saying before, if you turned it, which I decided
to purposely flare
a 3-wood, I decided to take one at the pin and then draw it with a 4 to make sure I covered the bunker. And it was perfect. I mean, it landed kind of by Taylor's ball, but since it's tailing left, obviously it just ran into like the back fringe about 60 feet. It's just, like I said, it's just demanding. There wasn't an easy hole, even 16, as easy as it played. Relative to the golf course, if you miss the fairway, you're in a spot of bother. Today I was in the fairway and it was still an awkward shot. So it's a really, really cool golf course. I'm really glad they got the conditions. I think the only thing that I probably would assume the super, whoever set it up, would just want the greens to maybe be a little more receptive, because I thought that like they kind of got in trouble for themselves, just because like you couldn't really put pins on the front of the greens, because I don't really know how you would get to them, which is okay too. I mean, you could just, you know, it goes back to like pars is kind of obsolete. You know, we look at it as par, but get the ball in the hole in the least amount of strokes you can.
You shoot plus five and win, who cares, right?
I mean, that's what I kept saying about the first three holes. First three holes were the hardest three holes on tour, I'm assuming, for the year. And into the
Taylor Gooch thing was great.
Oh my God.
Saturday played with you and he tweeted that out. He said you bet him $20 if he was under par.
It wasn't even a bet. I just said, I'll give you $20. It wasn't like, it wasn't a bet. It was funny. He's like, can we tweet about this? Cause I don't want to like incriminate ourselves. Like, it's not a bet. I literally offered you money if you could do it. You know, like it wasn't like he had to give me.
He birdied one and two.
So that was my best shot I've seen today, but I'm going to put it in a 2-hole stretch. He didn't miss a shot for two holes. And I can't, again, I'm going to go back on it. Back to it. It was 35 degrees. It felt like he pipes one down one. I said, great drive. It goes in the bunker. He has this brutal fairway bunker shot, 6-iron over, you know, got to get over the lip. It's straight into like a 20-mile-an-hour wind. Then it's a left pin over a bunker. He hits it like 12 feet, makes a birdie, which was already, I was like, you're the best golfer I've ever seen. And then on two, he hits this like hold 4-iron again up on the right hill, comes down to 20 feet, makes it. And I am just dying in my head. I'm like, this is the greatest $20 I've ever spent. And then he misses the fairway on three, hits it right under a tree. And before he hits it, I looked at Joe and I said, I have a bad feeling that I'm not going to have to pay him $20. And again, like it's just a tough spot. He chipped, hit a great chip, but it hit, you know, firm on the fringe and ran all the way in the water. And so it was brutal, but like it was truly the best two holes I've ever seen back to back. You couldn't fathom, especially all of us had made the cut on the number.
Two is impossible.
Two is the pin where he made birdie was like the only, in my opinion, the only doable birdie. Like you could, if you hit a phenomenal shot, you would get rewarded. Whereas like today, the back left pin, you really had to hit nearly a perfect, like, I don't know, like a perfectly shaped shot and, you know, still kind of get a good bounce to pull it off. But like the one on the front right of that green or middle right of that green, you could conceivably, like I said, his hit at the right hill and roll down, which is what he was trying to do. But it was, two. I mean, one, two, and three were a joke. We were 2 over 3, and I was telling Joe, like, this is like, I'm okay with this. Like, this is fine. If you birdie 4, you're kind of right back in the golf tournament.
I mean, you were at one point, I think I took a screen grab on my computer. At one point, you were 1 or 2 over for the day today on Sunday. And you had the position. Your position.
Oh yeah, I kept looking at it. It's kind of funny to like look at these things. Like it was just comical.
It's just so different. There's so many events, and this is why it's so fun. Because I feel like as a golf fan and viewer, you know, I'm sitting home watching it on my TV. If it was like this every week, it would, I think, at times get a little tough to watch because the guy.
Sure.
It's just a guy getting beat up all the time. Sure. You don't want to see the guy get beat up all the time.
But it's fun to see like the short game be used a lot, I think.
Yeah, I mean, every little shot, every pitch shot, bunker shots are brutal. As you said, guys are chipping balls in the water. Guys are taking cameramen out, apparently. Soft players are taking cameramen out if they're not being careful.
He looked hungry for Sizzler, man. I thought I'd throw him a bone.
Your boy Bob Cormandy, shout out. So you made the cut on the number, what we talked about. You did something similar at the Waste Management this year. You were hovering right around the number.
Yeah, I think I made it by
2
or
3.
Maybe.
Yeah, birdied, what'd you birdie? 14, 15, yeah. 17, and 18 to comfortably make it. But you were, if you remember, this was our first episode, on 13, you were, I believe, maybe outside the cut line or right at it, and you didn't birdie the par 5 and somehow make this bomb at 14. But I like just the importance of making the cut for you now, having a few years on tour, having a few years going through the, like, basically trying to kind of getting through the rookie, you know, rattling off all the cobwebs and getting comfortable as a pro, knowing the importance of making a cut, because twice now you have either been outside the cut on the back nine of your Friday round or you make the cut on the number, and both events you end up having a great week. And I feel like maybe at times you're not having a great week, you're outside the cut line, you got 4 or 5 holes to go, you're still trying to make birdies, but you're a little frustrated with the week. And I feel like for you, you know that if you can get to the weekend, I feel like, as you said, you seem to kind of step it up on Saturday and Sundays, and you could jump 30 or 40 players.
Yeah, I think every week's a little different. I'm not saying that you'd ever want to miss the cut or not grind to make the cut, but I would say like at a tournament that's a lot softer and you know, with the scores a lot lower, I would imagine at times some of the top players in the world, instead of being in 63rd, they might be like, well, this is kind of a waste, because then on the weekend you have to shoot something ridiculous, like 18 right. under, just to make it, you know, reasonable around the lead. But somewhere like here, it's like a major. If you make the cut and you shoot even, all of a sudden you're in a great spot. But for me, like I said earlier, this week was big to make the cut because, you know, Joe very astutely pointed out that if this is going to be a great course for me going forward, I need to see it a few more times. I need to get more comfortable with every wind direction. I need to get more comfortable on the tees. I did feel that way today. I felt like I was walking up to each hole knowing kind of already had my plan. It's like when I play Riviera or Pebble, like I already know what I'm going to do no matter where the wind's going. So it's just a comfort thing. It's like playing your home course, I guess. But also like you want to keep working on the stuff you're working on. I've obviously struggled with my short game. If you look at the stats the last year and a half or so, I didn't do a very good job on Thursday, found something practicing after. So Friday was great short game. And then had a, you know, the stats don't say it, might've been the shank, but like my short game was so much better than the this weekend, Friday through Sunday, really. So that was a lot of fun to be able to work on that on the course, because it's not something I can really kind of simulate in practice. So that was cool. Obviously, just being able to know that you can move up is the biggest part. But I've always said, or always thought, that, you know, making the cut is an accomplishment in itself, and you want to keep playing, especially for me. I mean, let's say this week I was going home, it'd be different. Again, you're I'd still Florida, rather make going, the cut, but I fly right. home. But I'm going to play the Players this week. I want to keep my game as sharp as possible. I want to keep working on what I'm working on. I thought I was playing really, you know, quite well, a little off here and there. Obviously the golf course can beat you. even on days where you're kind of mediocre. And that's what I felt like it was doing. But I felt optimistic. So I wanted to keep playing so I could keep practicing and keep kind of grinding away and put myself in a position to do something good and have some good momentum going into obviously a huge event. So I feel like I've learned so much every time I've grinded to make a cut, whether it's from that Friday and the grind, or if it's like sometime on that weekend, I'm like, oh, I picked something up. Like I figured something out a little bit here and there. And I think if you add all those up, that's why you kind of grow as a player a little bit.
So first week with the grab bag of gift cards.
Yeah, I didn't hit anybody. All still in there.
Didn't hit anybody. And I was thinking about this. We didn't plan this. We're not this smart. But it's apropos that the week we decided to go with the gift card grab bag is the week you're in Orlando, home to the most chain restaurants,
dude,
maybe in the whole entire
I was thinking country. About using some of them. I kept driving by all these places.
And you picked up a whole bunch?
I got a bunch.
You get them in Arizona or did you get them out there?
No, I got them here. I went to a CVS. I had a whole wall full like you posted on your Instagram. It was
can we ask what the final swipe was?
Yeah, so it was we have a $100 just regular gift card. Like you could, like a credit card.
American Express or Visa, yeah. Something like that.
And
MasterCard, shout out Arnold Palmer.
We also have a Red Lobster one for, I think, 25. Yeah. We have a Chili's one, I think, for 15. We have 10 $5 Starbucks cards that came in a pack. And we have a $10 Chick-fil-A. And now, thanks to my good friend Casey, he went to Sizzler, went inside one. And went up to the guy in the front and said, hey, can I get a gift card? And the guy at the front said, I don't know. Like, I've never done that before. And he started laughing. He said, I can call somebody. He said, okay, cool. Well, is there any chance you can make it for $12? And the guy apparently was on the phone. He said he was in there for like 40 minutes. But a guy got me a $12 Sizzler gift card. The funny part is we were talking about it. I don't know if it's going to work. Like, I have the receipt in there. I don't know if it's going to work. And that would be even better if you go to pay at Sizzler and you end up having to pay full boat after all that. So I didn't have to give any away. So it's all still in there. I'll add to it as people start to, you know, kind of get chipped away at a little bit, the bag.
You mean get hit? You mean when you hit people, right?
Well, I use the word chip because that's the closest I got to hitting somebody this week.
What's your favorite? This is not a sponsored segment. What's your favorite chain restaurant? What's your favorite sit down? This has got to be a place that's around the country. This
can't
be like
before
down the
I was eating no meat. It was Outback. The joke on the web.com tour was if you went to Outback at night and you went to the bar, you would see me eating there by myself. I love Outback. I mean, Chipotle is, I guess that's a sit down. That's like my go-to.
Chipotle is sit down? You can
I sit down, man. I guess it's not sit down. You don't get seated by a hostess. I guess you're a hoity-toity. I'm good. I'll get my own food up at the register. That one's good. Like the nice ones are like Bonefish is bomb. I used to like Chili's a lot.
I'm a big Chili's
guy. But my order has chicken in it, so I can't.
I'm a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer.
What's the veggie options at Chili's?
I don't think they have one. I think even their vegetables have like a little bit of
baby back rib in the middle.
Yeah. My old joke was that even at Chili's, even the water has calories.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. you get, it's 40 calories just to drink a couple of
They got good corn there though, so that's bomb.
Well, the queso dip at Chili's is the best appetizer in the world. And I will not stand for anybody to say it's not. I'm not kidding. I think it's like 2,900 calories.
Yeah, see, it makes sense.
For your app and the chips.
But that's why it's all good.
It's unreal.
So yeah, so we see a lot of chains traveling around so much. So I won't, during shrimp week at Red Lobster is fire. That's really good.
Still can go there. You still can do that.
I still could go there. There's a lot of good ones. I will say, I know I joke about it, but I frequent them quite often.
Yeah. I mean, and you've told me that the change in your diet, Chipotle is basically the
I get so Fritos. Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah. You tell them what's up. Well, from one of our new things that we're doing in the gift bag, to something we typically do at the end, but I'm a little confused. I don't understand what's happening. Nothing changed in the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge for Max Homa.
Dang.
Still fifth, man.
Jason Day is playing a crafty way to make $1 million. I don't blame him.
So I don't know how this works. I think we've made that abundantly clear that neither of us have any clue what's going on. But you have 0 rounds to go.
Yeah, yeah, I hit my threshold, yeah.
Yeah, you've come now. I think, you know, like today, this week, I think it's only two rounds. I don't know. But you played the 16th hole. You made two birdies, so you would have played it two under. Jason Day still has 20 rounds to go. I just feel like he's going to exhaust himself at some point. He can't keep this going. 20 rounds?
Honestly, hopefully his back's all right, because it is a bummer to see someone as good as him deal with all this. But 20 rounds is going to be a lot.
Yeah, Justin Thomas has
five events. So
yeah, McDowell has 13. These are guys in front of you.
I got to get lucky and have Taylor jumped in
big time.
Did he?
Yeah, 8-4.
8-4th, hey, that's pretty impressive.
And Scotty Scheffler, 23rd to T6th. He's just breathing down your neck, dude.
I think that these guys, I mean, if I'm gonna like kind of play the optimist here, they just don't want it as bad as I do.
I agree with you. I think that's right. Yeah.
At a point, like, that matters, especially in something as big as the Aon Risk Reward Challenge.
Now, I was going to talk to somebody at the tour, honestly, If you win this, I would like to come out. Do you think there's a presentation? I mean, there's got to be, right?
Can we decide where it is? Because that would be awesome if we did it at Sizzler and at just all Sizzler. Worlds
That's
collided.
What I was going to say. We have it outside Sizzler. We dedicate
Greg
it.
Greg with two G's hands the check.
Greg's
over.
There. We fly Greg in. We get him a fly. Give him one of the Starbucks gift cards. He's got $5 gift card. Somebody's going to get hit, grab a random thing out of here. There's going to be a $5 gift card. He's going to give it back to you.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, lot of people that, like, the last couple of days have asked, like, can I get a gift card? And even Joe today said, you got to get hit, man. Like, I'm not just giving out money. This is gold in here.
Shout out Joe. You told me Joe after your birdie on Thursday on 16 told
you. Yeah, he pointed out. I totally forgot.
He said that's – what did he say?
He said – I think he just – I was like walking to 17 or walking off 17 maybe. He's like, that was a big birdie for the Aon. I was like, oh, my God, I totally forgot.
He's so professional that it makes me happy internally that he would mention such a thing that we enjoy so much.
Again, we had a team meeting and he's way on board. Like, we're deep in the woods of winning this thing.
So this is a little inside Max's life, but let's just say, let's fast forward 4 months, 5 months, and we're at a Sizzler, and you just got $1 million richer, and Aon had presented you with your big check. And are you, does our caddy friend that's amazing and an unbelievable human being get his Aon cut?
Yeah, you better believe it.
He gets a cut.
Of course.
So you think if you won the FedEx Cup, he gets a cut out of the FedEx Cup
for
money?
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
Would he quit if you won the FedEx Cup?
And God, just, I hope so. I just hope he enjoy his way life. Better than this. Yeah, I'd never see him sail off in the sun, never to be seen again. I would condone that. Like, I want him to do that. I want him to, like, just go buy, like, a nice thoroughbred horse and just run into the sun. I'll film it, and then I'll just say, see you later, man. It's been a really good run.
Well, it
I might do the same.
I was going to say, I don't know why you keep playing. I mean, you like golf enough.
Yeah, I'll just go start playing with you guys at home all the time. That'd be way more fun.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
You play on Sundays, typically. Most of the time this year, actually. And typically there's a big basketball game on Sundays.
Gosh, I'm so bummed.
Yeah, you missed Clippers Lakers today.
Yeah.
I want to just let you take the floor here about your Los Angeles Lakers. 9-1 the last 10 games. They are now 6.5 games clear.
Clinched a playoff berth for the first time in a long time since 2013, 2012, I think.
I have this, it's probably a faulty comparison, but you know how Tiger looks like he's enjoying competing so much now? And you can see in his eyes when he's playing and competing that every moment matters to him.
Yeah.
And I think age does that. You know, you get to a certain point in your career and you realize you're going to be 50 soon. LeBron's playing right now like a guy that understands he's got an unbelievable chance to win a championship this year. And he's just enjoying still being one of the best, if not the best players. Sure. In the NBA, and it was today. I mean, you missed it, but it was, you could see the joy in the guy's face, and that's why it's so fun to watch him play basketball right now.
Yeah, he's just still so good. The Lakers just have I think they have a great overall team. We have, like, Jared Dudley.
We're gonna wee that.
All right, they.
You weed the. I let the caddy wee go.
Yeah, because we were literally talking about it.
Yeah, but you.
We walked up. We both did.
Okay, but you.
I hit a shank, Joe.
But what about
Joe's the lefty shank goes back in the fairway about 180 yards. So unfortunately, that actually might have been a better lead.
Before we started the podcast, Joe was walking by and he goes, "You showed a video. It's a behind you shank video. How hard were you swinging 90 miles an
hour? Too hard. All went bad. It all went bad.
And not typically good, but. But I'll let you have the floor on your Lakers.
Dudley being on the team's huge. I follow him on Twitter, and he does a great job of just kind of saying to people who trash talk him and say he doesn't score. He talks about how big of a role he plays. He mentors Kuzma and keeps everybody light, I think, and kind of is a veteran presence. Obviously, LeBron and AD are a joke. Kuzma is really coming into his own. Alex Caruso is like the greatest ever off the bench. Shout out him. He followed me on Twitter the other day. Get goosebumps.
So excited.
He's my boy. So like the whole team just seems to be enjoying themselves. In a weird way, I did kind of feel like I noticed the week after the Kobe tragedy happened. It did seem like, and I'm sure LeBron kind of pushed this, like they seem to really, like you said, enjoy it and start to soak in that like this is a fun life, they're living, and the opportunity they have to do some great stuff is really cool. I also think winning is a lot of fun for them. They are obviously super stacked and really, really good. It's really cool to watch LeBron do this in his 17th year. I mean, again, we talked about it yesterday, but I don't get how people dislike him. I understand if you don't love his Instagram and social media stuff, but I mean, he is an ultimate team player. Like I said, going on 17 years and he's still putting up these crazy numbers. He obviously commands the floor. Anthony Davis is a phenomenal basketball player, but I'm assuming he would also say that LeBron's the man on that team. Everything runs through him. He's like a basketball genius. So it's fun. And it was fun to see them or hear that they kind of stomped out the Clippers. Cause I do believe that in a 7-game set, like they wouldn't lose to the Clippers. I don't know a team that really would beat them right now unless they got really hot. But I mean, for me, it's fun. For a Lakers fan who's used to, I grew up with them having Shaq and Kobe where they never lost. It was a kind of a long run, a dry spell. So it's nice to be really excited to watch these games.
You're not bringing out the Smush Parker jersey. You're telling me that's going to stay.
No,
in the closet.
I think that stays in the trash can.
You and I went through how many jerseys you own, and
I think it's way less than you.
No, that's not true. I own.
You've had so much more time to like accumulate them.
I have more time to buy jerseys.
No, because of your age.
because of my that's fair. Yeah. I have what was your first jersey as a kid?
Oh, do you remember? Gosh. No, I don't. I do remember I had the most random one I ever bought was a Jermaine O'Neal one.
Which team?
When he was on the Pacers. It was a retro, like the white and blue and yellow, and it was sick. And I did not know why I had it except that it looked cool.
I had a Nolan Ryan jersey in the day, and I but my first, as a kid that said I want this jersey was Penny for sure.
Oh, that's two or three pennies. I had Jerry Rice was my first ever, and then my first one I got because I really wanted it. I think it was Allen Iverson.
I never had the Iverson thing, but I did see that Reebok is going to bring back the Iverson shoes, which I wondered why that hasn't happened before. And they're going to bring out a whole new line and different colorways and stuff like that.
I think they were called.
Yeah,
those were
cool. So those commercials.
They need to bring back the spinner wheels on the shoes. Remember those?
Did they have those?
I think they were Reeboks. Yeah, you could take it and you could spin the thing like you had a big old suit.
Like you had
car.
Wheels?
Yeah, like you had wheels. I didn't have them because even I knew that it was a little ridiculous, but they were sweet to look at.
Let me just say this. Reebok, not scared to take chances. The pump worked. The spinner, not so much.
All good. I mean,
the pump was
sometimes
the best.
Shoot or shoot, man. That's why they had AI.
Yeah, I think currently I've got a Steph jersey. I've got a TJ McConnell jersey, 76ers jersey.
You and his family.
So this was, I'm not going to reveal my friend that's husband now had worked at the 76ers, but I asked her about 19 times if she could get me one. I'm pretty sure she sent me one of his actual jerseys.
Yo, that's pretty sweet then.
I don't think they made McConnell fan jerseys because it's way too big for me. I mean, I think he's like 6'4", right? He's got to be, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
he's an NBA.
I was kind of swimming in it. I think Steph, that, and I've got a Penny one.
And you have the two Kobes.
And I've got the Kobe ones that I got from when he got his retirement. Yeah. That's the ones you wore on 16 yeah. at DPC Scottsdale.
Yeah, pretty sweet. I mean, I know people make fun of grown adults who wear jerseys, but I mean, it's one of those weird things I like to have. I don't know why. Like, cause I've got like a LeBron one. I just got it when he joined the team. It just is like to have an kind of.
I wear them around cherish. The house. I don't wear them out, and yeah, I don't
that's,
wear them
that's
to
a good
events,
one.
But they're
I wear
around
them to sporting
the house
events
outfit.
At times. Cause I got a dog. I have a couple Dodgers ones, but they made me like a Dodgers with my name on the back, which was sweet. So I have that one. I'll wear that to games. And
that was when you threw the first pitch out.
Yeah. So,
how was your pitch, by the way?
Oh, horrible. It was so guidey.
So was it was high, wasn't it?
It was high and inside. I joked that it was a setup pitch, but it was just a guidey, like it was a shot put. I just like didn't want to screw it up. It was really bad. Yeah. I'm a long term, I'm trying to befriend all these pitchers in the MLB so they can teach me how to throw it real hard.
If you were gonna write a blog post on advice for people that are gonna throw their first pitch out, what would your maybe three or four bullet points be about it?
I think one is just to wing it, like to throw it as hard as you can, like hum one, just to like let all the kind of nerves go out.
Like 50 Cent, you might throw it behind you.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty bad. If you have any athleticism in your body, then try to throw it hard. If not, maybe just like underhand it. The other one would be just not look up and around at how many people are watching you throw. Third would be, I think the best way to do it is put both fingers on the seams, because I think that makes it fly the straightest, even on a little miss. So that was a little advice I got. So yeah, I don't know. It's a scary thing. It's really fun. But when you get up there, I can't imagine being a pitcher in the major leagues.
Did you have like a couple of cocktails before?
I had a shot of tequila and I think a beer or two.
Okay. So I was going to say, probably important to do that.
I was doing nice up there.
probably important to calm the nerves. Just 2% if you can.
I couldn't have done it without it. I would have had a minor meltdown. Not only I might have started like tearing up for how happy I was to be out in my favorite place in the world.
What would I have shot at Bay Hill on Saturday and Sunday?
I'm trying to think of how many holes are shorter for people than 494 that you could have been on in one.
For people listening, I'm currently a plus handicap.
Oh yeah, Shane's really good. You've like had a run of only part shots scores in the 60s.
But you know, I'm asking.
If I'm being honest, are you going to be taking offense?
No.
To it?
I'm not the soft one here.
that was nice. Well done. If I was super soft, I'd have been really mad about that. I honestly think you. Probably, I would think if you broke 85, you would be okay with it.
Thrilled, yeah.
I mean, thrilled. Probably. I mean, thrilled. I think you'd be thrilled with breaking 80.
Yeah.
I truly don't think like the line would be 80 and a half at least. I would actually say it's 82 and a half. It just was like, dude, you as someone who is obviously you're a really good golfer, but you don't practice a lot. Like you needed a lot of shots. You have a lot of like long bunker shots. You have a lot of shots that. Just demanded not just touch, like you had to kind of practice them and your lag putting needed to be spot on. Like you said before, like you're going to have probably 7 to 12 4-footers.
So
I mean, so how many of those do you think you're going to miss? If you miss a few of them, you're in trouble. You're going to, you know, probably make a double. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's just hard. Like Joe kind of pointed out, like, I don't know where you would make birdies. Unless you could do what I was doing and just make at all the putts in the world, but you're just not going to hit a lot close. It was brutal today too. I mean, it was brutal Thursday, Friday. That's the other thing. Even Thursday, I think it would have been a good round to break 80. I mean, it was probably really difficult. So it's one of those things again, like I joke about how, I point out how I wish that there were more bad shots shown on TV and I really loved it. Cause I liked mine. Mine was hilarious. Even they were laughing in the booth. Like that's great. Also just in general, this course, if you just follow the leaders, the best players in the world at that moment, like you're going to see some really bad shots.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It just pushes you to hit some bad shots.
You can't not.
It's fun to watch and see that.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Joe this week gets to be a part of the Caddy Challenge on 17 at Saugus Tuesday or Wednesday,
he
right?
He has a dichotomy of shots he's hit so far in his career.
Now he's a lefty. What's the what's the plan for
he'll
that?
He'll carry 15 clubs.
Okay, so he'll throw a lefty. Now he's got to carry one club And if it's gusty, you got to hit it. So is he carry more? Is he over there? Can you ask him what he's thinking about carrying?
Hey, Joe, come here. We're talking about your
breaking podcast protocol. I love it.
Hey, ask him about the first time he had the shot. When
Okay.
Here you go.
He's putting his headphones. Joe, welcome you into the podcast for the first time. We talk about you a lot. We were talking a little bit about Caddy Challenge coming up.
Yep.
Here at Sawgrass, you've been a part of it. First, let's hear your first time ever doing it, the story there.
Ooh, first time. I don't remember it, but people have told me that I hit it off the hosel and it went right into the water.
Kind of a theme going in this podcast, a little off the
hosel. Some shanks.
You're a lefty, and so was there a chance it could have got to the grass where the fans hang out?
It could have gotten there. It dove pretty quick right in there, though.
All right, so you're going to carry a 15th club on challenge day, on the caddy day. Now, I was just talking to Max about this. You know, you don't know what kind of wind you're going to get. It might be gusting. Are you thinking about going with like a 7 or an 8 iron, and then you might just have to chip it? Or are you just banking on it's going to be a wedge?
I'm going to know where the wind is because I'm going to check the wind, and I want to make sure it's right before I go out there. But my plan is probably to just bring a pitching wedge, and if I have to hit a little harder, I will, but I don't really like chipping anything onto that green.
Gotcha. And then my last question for you, you know, there's some, as we've heard, I don't know if you knew this or not, but we broadcasters love to talk about how great the caddies are in their own right.
Yeah.
Where do you stack right now if Vegas was going to set the odds as you possibly being the favorite? Who would you set as the caddy favorite for this, and where would you fall?
Well, I'm going to say Austin Kaiser. For two reasons, because I think he's done it before. I think he hit it 1 year to 6 feet, and he beat me in golf the other day, and right now he owns me, so he's my horse to win it.
Where do you sit? Would you be top five Vegas betting odds?
There's a lot of really good players out here. Maybe top 10. I think I
top 10.
Top 10, yeah.
What do you got to hit it? What normally wins this thing? Inside 5 feet?
Yeah, I would say 5 or 6 feet. I hit it to 10 feet or 11 feet one time, and I felt pretty good about it. And then Tommy Fleetwood's caddy hit it to 6 or 7 feet.
And while we have you, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the home of Shank today that made air.
Yeah. I mean, looking back at the video now, I'm like, he swung so hard at that. I mean, the lie was so bad, but we just didn't know what to do. And we just panicked, and he hit full lob wedge off the hosel, and we made six.
when you're in that seat, and you've got a player, Max or otherwise, whoever you've had it over the years, and when they hit a non-professional shot, is it head down, hey, we'll get them, let's go figure it out, kind of like 10 cup? I mean, is that kind of what you're doing?
Yeah, you got to just, I mean, I feel like some guys are embarrassed. Max might be embarrassed after that. So you got to think of something really funny really quickly, or just walk straight to the next shot.
Well, I appreciate it. First time on the podcast. Won't be the last. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Joe, with our first interview of the
year. Yeah. You know what? You know, he was going to be the first interview. Are you guys sharing a room? Do you guys share a room a lot?
Well, we used to a lot. We still do, but tonight, Joe has waited months now. He still doesn't have a hotel room for the week.
So no way.
Yeah, so he was in a spot of bother, but tonight I'm renting a house with a few buddies, JT Poston and Keith Mitchell, this week, but we can't get in there till tomorrow. So Joe and I are playing golf with the no laying up guys. I'm going to start testing their skills for our little match we've got coming up. So we're playing in the morning. So we split in a room, but we split a room all the time. I mean, Joe's basically family. So
when I've always wondered this about pro golfers, now that you're, you know, kind of big time, when you split a room, or when, you know, JT and Spieth and these guys split houses it at a open championship, how do you know who gets the master?
That's a great question.
Do you draw straws?
Oh my God, that's a great question. I have no idea how they do it. I mean, we don't have a master. We have two queen beds in the same room. So I got the window so I could have the better view by 3 feet.
You got to win the Aon Challenge. Yeah. Then you'll have your own master.
I think a lot of the times it's probably who sets up the house. Okay. Like I would assume this week, I think Keith set it up. So he probably will get it. Actually, JT might have set it up. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, I think, did Joe give me the, we played the, Joe and I sit together with his girlfriend and my wife and all our dogs, which was actually really fun, at Palm Springs. I think he gave me the master, but I'm not really sure.
You don't assume. You don't just walk into
a dog. No, I don't care. I mean, the rooms, you know, they got a bed in it. They're nice. It's not really a big deal. I'd assume the houses JT and Spieth are running are like, they are all master bedrooms.
Yeah, they're multiple masters. Yeah. They're not, one of them's not sleeping on a twin, you don't think?
Yeah, I think their chef is probably the only one that sleeps on like the, you know, not California king bed.
I wanted to get to flights. I want to start with good idea, dumb idea. I got a good idea.
Shane, give me a good idea.
So my good idea.
Don't hit the hostel.
the best
don't
way,
be soft.
If the golf channel's going to show you on TV, hit a shot. Best not to almost kill the guy that's filming it. You're never going to get shown again. That was basically it. You're done on TV unless you shoot 59.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much out now.
So good idea, dumb idea. I have a good idea this week. I've been walking a lot on the golf course, a lot more lately. The weather in Arizona is awesome. Sorry if you live in a place that's cold and brutal. That's your fault. Arizona weather's been awesome. When you're walking, there's one downside and one downside only, and somebody needs to invent something to fix this. And I'm not smart enough to invent anything, so this is on you people. Invent something where you can have a drink that holds the drink while you're walking, because that's the one downside of the walking experience, is it's brutal to have a beer, a cocktail, anything in your hand. It's virtually impossible to do that when you're walking. You have to set it in the grass. It falls over. You know, you put it next to the green. You got to put it on a sprinkler. It's just not that much fun to do it.
No, our boy Andrew Omer gave me one of those canisters that you could actually slide a beer into.
And
that was really nice because then it had a lot more balance. The bottom was a lot bigger, so you could get it to settle a lot easier. But yeah, when you're walking with the beer. Unless you have a really cool pocket in your golf bag, you're in a spot of bother.
Well, and the aluminum screw on cans have made this problem better. True. Because when they fall over, they don't spill. But they also are worse to drink out of than an actual can. But anyway, that's a whole other discussion. Do you have a good idea, bad, dumb idea?
I do. Don't hit the hustle.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah, that's about it. I didn't really have very many good ideas. Joe was the MVP of good ideas this week. I was about to say before he came on, but glad he already did. This was one of those weeks. There are certain tournaments you play when it's soft where you could probably get by thinking, I don't really need a caddy. Like, you could have done a lot of it yourself. This week was one of the first weeks where I think he changed my club probably 12 times. And every time after I hit, I was like, where was my other one going? Like, that would have been so bad. Like, a couple of times I wanted way more club. He'd be like, no, this gets there. And we get up there and it's pin high or something. And I'm like, I would have been 25 yards over the green. Same. And then on 9 today, I thought maybe 9 could get there and end up hitting 8. And 8 was like short of the hole by 8 feet. So shout out to all of his good ideas, because they really paid off in that.
Yeah. Phil and Bones always had that one veto thing. What's the process with you guys when you're talking through a club into a par 4 on a par 3? You guys have the bag down there. You're, you know, checking the wind, doing everything you guys do. What's the process in terms of the conversation when you guys decide on a club?
I think quite often, if I have the club ready to be hit, it's usually whatever he thinks. So gotcha. I listen to him a lot more. There's a couple times, and it won't happen often, because again, it's almost a mental thing. That's the most difficult part about his job, I would say, is if I want to go for a green, let's say, or if I want to hit a 7 instead of an 8 and it's over water, or I'm sorry, 8 instead of 7, let's say, and I want to take one on, it's hard for him to say no without, if I do end up pulling that club, especially going for a par 5, where I'm still going to feel confident in it. So he does a great job of still not really ever making it seem like it's going to be a bad idea. Although, you know, it might be, but you still want to make a committed golf swing. So that's where it's difficult. But for the most part, we're very on the same page. That's why we work so well together. But yeah, it's like, at times, super rarely, I'll be like, hey, give me this one. Or he'll say, hey, give me this one. And like he said today on a sandwich, I didn't think I could hit far enough. He's like, trust me on this, it gets there. So it's like, sometimes you'll override each other and just be like, hey, I got this one. Like, tell me. And I'll tell him that too. I said, this one's on me if I don't pull it off.
Right. Best thing you heard this week?
There were actually a lot of them. I mean, people are getting really funny on the golf course with the Twitter stuff, critiquing my swing and this and that. I don't know if I have a best one. For the most part, I want to shout out everybody on the golf course. I know I don't give a lot of people, a lot of reaction to what they say, but I think a lot of it's pretty funny.
If you guys are wondering, Shane just rolled up his sleeve to show me his guns.
Jeez, I forgot Louise, you could see Shane. Me.
It's one 494-yard drive. You're probably just looking at yourself in the
mirror. No, I've got it. Listen, I've got prep work I've done. I got a whole Word document. I can barely see your face.
I got you. Well, yeah. But yeah, so I would say everybody with these funny jabs. Now, some of them are bad. It's also the worst things I hear all week are similar to these, but it is funny. You know, people yelling, you know, critique my swing, or people saying funny jokes about the gift cards, shouting out, you know, Sizzler and Applebee's and all these places, I think is really fun. There was a lot of people out there today or this week, and they were all, you know, yelling. And so there wasn't one I could kind of specify.
Yeah. So anything, do you have one for worst or not? Did you hear something?
Yeah, this guy terrible? Ate today. I was about to fight him for Sam.
No way.
Sam hit a ball in the water on eight, and it wasn't, you know, his best shot. But he hit a ball in the water on his third and ended up making it. Then he three putt, made a quad or something. And we're walking off the green. And again, you know I joked about it earlier, but this is really hard and I'm all for heckling, but this guy was just giving it to Sam, this, like, you know, kind of bro kid. And he kept yelling at Sam, like, you know, kind of great chunk, you know, nice shot in the water, all these things. And he kept yelling at Sam, like, hey, look at me. Why won't you look at me? Look at me. Like, just being kind of a bit of a punk about it. And I stared through his soul.
Really?
I was not happy. I mean, we're all out here, you know, again.
You don't have to defend it. I'm ready for the heckling. You're trying to do the media defense.
Though. That's kind of when I say, though, like, because I know people think I'm so soft. I like the heckling, but it was a little overblown. If you're going to make fun of a shot, make fun of the shot. But like he was just trying to get a reaction out of him, which then isn't that funny. Like right. It's funny if you just yell your funny thing. It's not funny if you're just trying to get a reaction.
And so, I mean, 99% of stuff's not funny that everybody says.
Yeah, but I would say, like I said, lately, especially with my stuff, they've been really funny. I mean, I like a lot of it. Even when I hit a bad shot, it's funny. I mean, the shank, you know, a lot of people, the guy, after I hit the shank, some guy said today, I think the play was to pitch it left. And I wanted to turn around, like, yeah, you think, like, you don't think that was the play to kiss it off the tower? Like, so, but that's funny. Like that stuff is what kind of cracks me up. But when you're just going to do something just to piss somebody off, then I'm not really on your side anymore. Then I'm thinking about coming up there.
Yeah, it's a little bit about, it's like Twitter. Yeah, I mean, the people that are really good at Twitter are the people that are having fun at their own expense, and they're not really giving it to people unless it's in a humorous way. And the people that are awful on Twitter are the people that are just mean to people all the
time.
For
sure. Being mean, like I think there's Jacoby says it on that Jalen and Jacoby podcast. I think he says you can be mean if it's equally funny. And if it's not very funny, then it's just mean. And you're not trying to be mean to anybody. I don't know why you'd just be mean. Why you'd buy a ticket to go to a golf event and just be mean to somebody. So like I said, the thing with Sam, I mean, he's a good buddy of mine too. It's like, you don't really want to hear people doing that.
Yeah, you don't want them grilling those out. What is the proudest moment of your week? I have a feeling I would know.
Can I hear your feeling first? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming it happens at some point during your third round. It might have been the par putt on 9 on Thursday. Didn't you make like a 30-footer on 9 to shoot even?
Oh, yeah, on Thursday. No, on 9. Yeah, that's right. No, my proudest moment. My final roll hole of the day, I made a bomb. No, my proudest moment was pretty much the whole back 9 on Friday. Because like I said, it was still really difficult. I know that the score is ballooned, but it was really hard on Friday. And I played a poor front 9, and I saw the scores were ballooning, and I had a feeling the cut was going to go to 3. I think I got it to 4 over at one point. And I just, like, I felt like I kept my cool. I felt like I knew I was playing well. It was nice to, like, feel confident, even though the score wasn't really reflecting it. And I really buckled down on the back and played a really borderline, like, flawless back 9. You know, had two great up and downs on 17 and 18 to
make the cut.
No, not on Friday.
Yeah, didn't you birdie on the first two rounds?
Thursday and Saturday.
Uh-huh. Bummer.
Yeah, so I didn't birdie. So that was the least proud I was of myself.
Yeah,
you walk but off. Yeah, it was it was just like a whole 9-hole stretch of just like, hey, you know, put your head down, you know, buckle in a little bit and hit some golf shots. And I did, and that was good. Making the 4-footer, obviously, on Friday on the last was a cool feeling, just like we talked about, to make the cut and have a few more reps on it. You know, a great golf course. So that was a proud moment. The other proud moment was just in general over these last 4 days, not breaking anything, because it sure was difficult. Like, you just wanted to throw something in the water or your whole body at some point.
I'm not kidding when I tell you this. Tyrrell Hatton has a stretch. The guy won the tournament. He won this week. He had a stretch on Sunday, and you obviously weren't watching this. You were out on the golf course or finishing up and getting out of there. There was a time where it looked like he was going to break a golf club.
Yeah. This was the guy that won. Two triples and I think finished ninth. Like, that's just a golf course. You just had to, like I said, you had to really have an understanding that you were going to make some bogeys. Like, things were going to happen that weren't good. And, you know, I think that it was interesting. The first major I ever played in was the U.S. Open when I was just finished college. So I was still an amateur and I played at Marion. And I got kind of a weird tee time in the sense that with the weather delay, I only got to play five holes the first day, five or six holes. So I had to play 30 holes of a U.S. Open in one day. And it's so demanding. I really noticed that Friday, beyond the golf course that long, I was getting really kind of frustrated and angry and like agitated. And today I noticed that with about four holes left, I was getting frustrated and angry and agitated. And it's just the golf course beating you mentally. Like, I did such a great job for, I would say, like 65 holes. And then all of a sudden, here I am, like, it just beat me up. You know, it got to me a little bit. And I think it probably got to most people. But, you know, that's why we love majors. That's why to win a major, you truly have to earn it.
Hey, you've got to be in at 72 holes. You know, that's typically what happens, unless you have an 8-shot lead, which means you've been playing flawless, like Rory did. Yeah. Stretch. It's like, outside of that, it's 72 holes of golf, knowing that, you know, like when Jimmy Walker won, you know, it's Jason Day makes eagle on the last hole to make you
make par
to win. It's never an easy, here you go, enjoy the day. I mean, even with Tyrrell Hatton, it's 2.5 feet on 18 to win. But yeah, you talked about it. 2.5-footers aren't easy to make on a golf course.
Yeah, not out there. Yeah, when we saw it, I was like, man, this is still a dicey little putt. Because I had a 3-footer on 18, and it still felt, like I said, that 18th green just didn't have a ton of grass on it. So even that putt, you feel, again, like it's a fairly defensive 3-footer.
What's the best shot you saw somebody hit?
I think it's Taylor. You already went over it? The first two. I mean, it was so freaking good. I didn't see two under through two. I truly didn't. I didn't even really think even through two is going to be too easy. So 200 through two, I mean, he's so good. I was so glad he played well today because he really earned it. As well as I played Saturday, he played just as well. And I think he shot even. So I had a good feeling. I think he probably was one of the only people under par for the weekend. I think he shot one under today. So that's just phenomenal golf. And from a player like we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago that I think is incredibly underrated. I think he's going to have an amazing career. And you can't luck your way into 200 through two on Saturday morning.
Toughest on course decision you guys had over the week?
Aeon hole, 16 on Thursday. I don't know if this was, you know, like overall the toughest decision, like the 19th, but it was the Aeon shot. Yeah. I had a window. I had a poor drive on 16. I had a window with a 3-iron to go like under this tree, 3 or 4 iron. And I, looking back on it, probably, grand scheme of things, looking at the way the tournament played out, it was such a dumb idea to even think about it. But even Joe was kind of on board with it for a minute. And then we just kind of looked at the lie and everything and just was like, just pitch the dang thing out and get up and down from 120 yards. And, you know, I ended up hitting a really good punch out and then had a kick in birdie. So that was nice. That was a good decision just because it's, again, early on in the tournament, you really don't want to make things bigger than they are. I do my best to try and, you know, play situational golf a little bit. And that was a good one to get rewarded for a great decision as well. Like I said, it's one of those things on a Tuesday with the boys, you're going to hit that shot under the tree. Right. Maybe you pull it off, maybe you don't, but it's just not worth it. And like I said, looking back on the week, I needed to have the understanding that pars were fine and just, you know, don't compound a mistake.
So when it's this tough, you know, or Marion, when you played Marion and there's only two par fives, or you play a U.S. Open and there's typically two par fives, one on the front, one on the back. Do you feel added pressure on the, and I hate this term, birdie holes?
No, quote unquote? Yeah, you really do. One of the best lessons I ever got from my one of my first coaches, Mike Miller, he told me, I remember I came in, he asked me about a tournament and I was like, yeah, you know, I played pretty well. I was just frustrated though because I didn't birdie a couple of the birdie holes. And he goes, Max, he goes, you hit the ball well. If you hit the fairway off the tee, every hole is a birdie hole. Like, you can hit a 6-iron close. Like, that's you know, kind of why you're good at golf. And as obviously you look at the PGA Tour where people are even better than I was when I was 13, you know, every hole could be a birdie hole. So you do unfortunately feel that added pressure, especially like, you know, today on hole 12 was finally kind of downwind and it's, You felt like you needed to take advantage of it. But at the same time, if you miss that fairway, you're laying up to 130 yards. So it's like all of a sudden not
at all a birdie hole. So you feel that pressure. You try to turn that off and just, you know, I told myself on the 12th tee, just like, don't think you got to bomb it. Just somehow hit the fairway and hit a horrible, like, low on the face drive, but it went in the fairway and we had a mile in and ended up making par, but like put ourselves in a position to make birdie. I had a short birdie putt. So it's a difficulty, especially of these hard courses, is there's so few opportunities. At times you do need to take advantage or be aggressive with irons if you do have a short iron in, even if it's a really hard shot, because you're not going to get, like Joe said it multiple times, like we're not going to have a lot of looks. So you gotta force it at times.
Yeah, I feel like that was the thing I noticed the most watching, especially on Sunday, that nobody was really hitting it close. You know, you talk about 18 and how you can't believe Tiger had so many birdie looks over the years. Really, the two birdies we saw on 18, Bryson and Sungjae, landed, and I'm not kidding, they might have landed a yard and a half over the rocks and landed in the fringe and rolled on. I mean, these were shots that were either the guys are insane taking the flag on, or they're pushing it off their line and getting a good kick and getting a kick forward, because that was not where you wanted to be. I mean, that was not the shot you wanted to hit in, because if it's a yard short, it's hitting the rocks and now you're going to look at making six or seven.
Yeah, it's just tough though, because like when you don't have a look all day and you get a good number with an iron, it's just sometimes that's also the beauty of these hard courses. It pushes you to trust yourself and hit that shot. You know, it demands at times you to take on a flag you might not, you know, for the, you know, 99% of your professional golfing life. And all of a sudden you're like, well, I have a good number, I have a good angle, I feel like I know what the wind's doing, let's suck it up and be a pro and you know, prove that you're a good player. So it's definitely a balancing act, man. Like you don't want to be overly aggressive, but you also want to make a birdie at some point throughout the day. So you know, like I said, it'll push you. And that's where you see someone like Tommy Fleetwood, who's one of the best players in the world and hasn't missed a cut in, you know, forever, and he misses a cut. And I'm assuming he doesn't, you know, feel like he can't go, like he has to go away from flags too often. So at some point you got to test yourself and hit one at it. But if you're not on, or maybe you catch a gust or whatever, the ball goes in the water and you look like a dummy. So that was especially the difficulty of the course today. And I'm sure it'll be the same as next week as it was last week at the Honda.
Yeah, I think the theme of the week was making professional golfers look fairly stupid. Because
yeah.
You saw the best in the world. We saw Rory hit some shots. Rory hit the shot on six today out of a basically the impossible 60, 70, 80 yard fairway bunker shot. And it looked beautiful. It looked like it was going to grab. It didn't, goes in the rocks. He makes seven. And, you know, he even looked perplexed when it landed because he couldn't believe it bounced the way it did. I mean, this guy's number one ranked player in the world, and it was making him look silly. That's kind of what it was. And you don't get really a let up. I mean, you're going into the Players and you're playing a golf course that can beat you up as well. I know you're a guy that enjoys tougher conditions. You going to Sawgrass, knowing typically this is going to be a brutal week, do you feel prepared again after these 4 days to get into the groove? And will you change your prep at all after four really tough, you know, mental days, physical days, all that, going into it? Like, will you play 9 holes instead of 18 just to get a little bit more rest?
Yeah, we're going to do, I think Joe was pointing out, we're going to do probably 9 Tuesday, 9 Wednesday. We're going to have a fun day tomorrow with the no laying up guys. I think Solly Tron and Neil and myself and Joe are all going to play. So that'll be like kind of a fun.
Yeah, just to go,
you know, kind of, yeah, slap it around, loosen up a little bit. But yeah, I still feel really good. You know, like I said, I'm striking my iron so well and I'm driving it okay. And the putter feels pretty decent. Like I said, I found a little something with the short game. So game's in a good spot. I know it's a good golf course for me because, again, you got to hit it quite well. Sometimes it's good to play a really hard event before a really hard event because you get in that mode of just grinding as hard as you can. I don't know if it would be the best prep ever to go play like the easiest golf course the week before and then all of a sudden come into like just a, you know, something that's just punching you right in the gut over and over again.
We've kind of seen the way that the pre-major events have changed. I mean, you look at, you know, the events, especially in Houston, it was always leading up to the Masters and they would always firm it up and make the green slick. And they tried that because they knew the players wanted to get a feel. And you see, you know, the Open Championship, you go across the pond, so many guys are going to play in the Scottish and they want Scottish to be on a golf course that at least feels like the golf course they're going to get a chance to play. You know, we're an hour 20. We didn't get a whole bunch of unbelievable questions. I'm calling you people out on that. You guys got to be better at the questions.
Do you have one you like?
You know, it was a whole bunch of questions about your shank.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like 30 questions about your shank. Somebody did ask if you had a go-to meal that you got after the round, but I think we kind of covered it. I mean, it seems like
Chipotle, that's probably baby. Chipotle. Brocco's Tacos was really good this week.
Brocco's is great, and that's on the drive back from Bay Hill there. It's like a 3-mile drive, and it takes like 45 minutes to get from
where God, you stayed. There's a lot of traffic.
So much traffic.
Goodness.
Is it all Disney?
I mean, it's got to be mostly Disney and Universal, but even driving out of the city was tough. Driving over to Jacksonville.
One interstate just, in a big city is brutal.
Yeah, it was tough.
It's a terrible setup. I wanted to let people know that I actually am going to go work tomorrow. I'm going to go to Austin, Texas, which sounds really weird because the event is at Banda Dunes. I'm going to be a part of College Golf Live Tuesday, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Nice.
Or sorry, noon to 5 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on golfweek.com, golfstad.com. This whole idea is to show more amateur and college golf, which I feel like is a very smart move because college sports tend to be popular. So why are we not showing a lot of college golf? You know, with my role at Fox, our opportunity to show so much amateur golf, man, people love it. You know, when they tune in to the US Amateur and the Juniors and the Women's AM, it's unbelievable golf. And these players are only getting better. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
I mean,
this
is legit real golf. I mean, John Augustin, I think, shot 63 or 60. He made 8 birdies in a row in the first round. I mean, you know, this is real stuff. I mean, even somebody like you, who it wasn't too long ago, you were in college. I mean, it feels like they're even better now than they were 5, 6, 7 years ago compared to what you guys did. You know, I mean, it just seems like the level of play in college 1 through 5 just continues to step up.
Yeah, they're getting better and better, and they'll continue doing that. I mean, you look at it right now, Scottie Scheffler, Victor Hovland, Colin Morikawa, Matt Wolf, like they came out and it didn't even miss a beat. They're already, you know, some of the best players in the world. So it's cool to showcase that before they were famous. You know, I remember watching Matt Wolf play the national championship this past season or a year and a half ago. That's crazy to think that he's already where he is now. But, you know, watching him play, and you know, I'd always heard about his golf game, and getting to watch it for 18 or so holes was really cool because I wanted to see what it was like and not just his golf swing. I wanted to see where the ball went and how, you know, he putted and chipped and all these things. And obviously, it's all great. So it's just cool. It's cool when they can showcase these young kids and you're still watching high level golf.
Yeah. I mean, they're still able to shoot, you know, sub 65 rounds.
Yeah. Yeah. They are. And even I know, Preston Summerhays playing the junior last year was like some of the most fun golf I've ever watched.
Like, it was silly. So, you know, I mean, what I love about doing the amateur stuff is it's really a first glimpse. You know, you talk about Wolf, and we had him at Flint Hills. Brad and I were broadcasting him in the championship match at Flint Hills years ago, you know, when he was a kid. And you know, we saw Akshay in the finals at Baltusrol. And you mentioned Preston, who I feel like is a guy that's going to continue to be on people's radar. You know, like Bryson, when he won the US Amateur in Chicago, was flames that week as well. I enjoy it because, again, I feel like I'm kind of cheating a little bit in terms of how much knowledge I can have on these guys when I get to watch them for 4, 5, 6 days. But anyway, that will be noon to 5 on Tuesday, March 10th, golfweek.com, golfstad.com. Me, Ricky Barnes, so 2 Wildcats.
Oh, nice. Bear down.
Guess who's walking the golf
course? Tell me Brad's walking
the golf course. For the first time ever.
The facts, man?
Andy Johnson.
Oh, nice.
Now TV. He went from writer to podcast extraordinaire, and now he's going to be broadcaster?
Is he going to be thrown off that everyone's teeing off the first hole and not the shotgun start?
Why are they not on 5? This is really weird. Are you 5B or are you 5A?
God, I can't. How many times is he going to say he has a great angle
here? Oh, they're playing Pacific. He's going to say it all the time.
This is where
you want to be. Left side of the fairway. So that's
that'll
what I'm going
to
be doing
It'll be cool to hear like his knowledge, because I think that, you know, not a lot of, I guess, architect junkies out there, broadcasting, I mean. So it'll be cool to hear his take on why certain shots are played certain ways. So that'll be really cool. Plus, we'll be hocked up on all that coffee. So that'll be even better.
We'll
be talking so fast.
We're going to have to podcast slow him down.
Buzzing.
hey, nice week, dude. Played great.
Thank you.
It was fun to watch. I enjoyed. I was playing golf Saturday morning, and I was refreshing my phone. You went 10 spots up, and then 8 spots up. And then all of a sudden, what'd you move up? 45 spots on Saturday?
Yeah, something like that. Well, I want to thank you for doing legitimately all of the work this week. I did absolutely no prep. I'm sorry if I didn't have questions ready or anything, but I had this was one of the hardest, busiest weeks ever. And it was hard to focus on anything other than the golf when I was out there. Sometimes I can hear things and kind of mentally jot them down, but my brain had no room for any extra, information.
I'm sure it's going to be the same this week, dude. This is crazy. This golf course is hard. So are you playing, you get a chance to play Augusta National in the next week and a half, right?
7.5 days.
So we need you. This is your job for the week. At some point, I need you to tweet out, how much am I going to spend in the pro shop?
Well, so I don't think I'm going to do it that Monday. I think I'm going to do it when I go back for the Masters.
For the Masters.
Because I don't feel comfortable going in there and buying stuff. Because I don't even know if they allow cash. I'm not going to put it on the guy taking me. I'm going to wait till I can use my credit card.
So then we'll do it Masters week when you buy merch. We will have people guess the max merch number.
Yeah, winner and gets closest to, we'll send you a hat. Flag or something, yeah.
We'll buy you a hat and a flag. And I mean, you know what? And a Sizzler. I'll get you a Sizzler
and a gift card. Throw one in there.
We'll have a Sizzler gift card. Drive the ball well this week. This is my last thing I want to say before we go. Everybody on Twitter, this has nothing to do with the soft remarks. Don't root for Max to miss fairways. We're rooting for Max.
I spited everybody by not hitting anybody. I wasn't even close this week. The closest I got was a camera guy, and the poor guy doesn't even know, first off, about these gift cards, and second off, I think he felt like the safest man in the world.
Wait, you're telling me Bob Cormandy doesn't know about the gift cards? Maybe Bob's a listener.
I think Bob has a lot better things to do than worry about the gift card. He seemed like he was chilling up there, just like living the dream. Away from all of the mayhem until
he's like, nothing'll come my way,
flying at his forehead.
He's such a great shot. I'm going to send, I made a GIF of it. I'm going to send this out with the podcast on Monday.
I got to thank whoever set that up and move that tower like the 7 inches it needed to be left so I could nick it off of that thing.
Yeah, whatever it was the director, whoever the NBC director is that set the towers.
I owe you a big thank you.
We're going to go to 6. It's a really awkward situation. One of the players hit the camera guy behind the green, 30 feet up in the air.
Just the first shot.
I do want to, and before we get off, Paige Spranick, one of our friends who has a great podcast as well that you should be listening to, on iHeart.
A great podcaster in her own right.
Yeah, there you go. The Paige, first time I ever played with her at True North, I hit a shank chip on the green. So it was a GIR. Sick. It was a shank chip GIR. And so every time a shank ever happens, she reaches out and she sent us a very nice Twitter of her.
About the shank.
She said, I must have taught you a thing or two. Follow at Get a Grip Pod on Instagram.
Do it.
And any of the Instagram stuff is the only time Max can say we, because his wife, Lacey, who is an awesome human being,
does it all.
So helpful. So that's you can use we for golf
I'm glad I know Instagram. The rules now.
Is there anybody that helps you with Twitter?
No.
This is all Max?
That's all me. No ghostwriters.
So Max
except,
is on Twitter.
Except when I say something there, people take us off. That's my ghostwriter.
Yeah, somebody. No. That's when you say that's when you say somebody hacked your account.
Yeah, somebody hacked my account.
Yeah, sorry guys. Somebody
I'm so sorry that I made up an arbitrary number and said 130. It's not like I added it up or anything. Somebody gave me the rundown. There'll be 7 on each hole. And I was like, okay. I just made up a number.
But you know what? I want you to look as we depart. This is a good thing in a way. Because it's your popularity is growing.
Oh, sure.
Your popularity is growing. Your numbers are growing. You're becoming a household name.
You guys can be as mean as you want to me. I'm mean back. It is all
no,
like I said,
I don't
worry. It's all funny to me. You could tell me I'm terrible because I know that I'm not now. 2 years ago, it might have hurt. 3 years ago, it might have hurt a little bit. Now I know I'm not. So you could be mean, man. I'll be all good.
Follow Max on Twitter at MaxHoma23 and send him, if you could, after you listen to this podcast, all hour and a half of it, just do us a favor. Send some nice message to Max on Twitter. He's not asking for it. I'm asking for it. One compliment.
That's really nice. You could be mean
from you listening right now as you get set to turn on whatever podcast you're going to turn on after this. Follow Max, max.homa on Instagram. His Instagram is blowing up. He's on it constantly. Get a Grip Pod on Instagram. We need to take more pictures together. We don't have enough stuff together.
Oh, wow. Big we thing. Jeez.
Well, this is our podcast.
No, it's that me and Joe's golf, man. It's a we.
Our Instagram account.
We're doing it.
And we, I'll give you the chance. Will you tell people to rate and review the show?
Yeah, please rate and review the show. As Shane,
what star would they give it? What star should they give it?
Hey, listen, give it whatever you want, but we're putting a lot of effort in this. At least Shane is. So please give it 5 stars. If you love the Shank, give it 5 stars. Why not?
5 stars.
It was a 1-star shot, 5-star review.
And I always say, we're also okay with 4-star. We get it. You know,
we're okay with 4. I've eaten at 4-star restaurants, 4-star hotels. They're lovely.
I've gone to anniversary dinners at 4-star restaurants. Yeah. That's fine. It's good. We'll be back next week, post-players. You played in the players before?
I have not.
First time. Florida swing continues. Then you get Augusta.
I don't even know about that walk that's 90 feet too far, or whatever they say.
So just keep your eye out as you get there. There's a par 3 on the back. I can't remember what hole it is, but it's
no Aeon hole, by the way.
Wait, I know. The Aeon, yeah. Risk.
Not even challenge. 17. They're famous.
Why would they not make it 17?
I don't know, man. It's interesting.
Aeon. Maybe buy. We love you.
Is it too much risk? There's just not enough. There's not enough coverage for all the risk.
There's no reward. It's just the Aeon risk pool. You're risking it all. Have a great week. Play well. Have some fun with the boys tomorrow, and we will check back next week.
Thank you, sir.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.